Just 1 week to go till this month's primary election. Who will get your vote? Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app, or watch the show with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. And just ahead, your full election scorecard, everything you need to know about the races and issues on the ballot. Give us a call right now at 549-2937. Then later, it's free help to quit smoking from Tobacco Free Florida. We'll tell you how you can access that. Plus, a look ahead to the fun of wine, women, and shoes. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, from the top races on the ballot to the hot issues up for debate, next week's primary election is much more lively than these types of contests usually are. There is so much to discuss, from the pension referendum in Jacksonville to some very hotly contested state and local races. A.G. Gankarski writes for Florida Politics and Folio Weekly and joins us now with your official election preview. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what are your thoughts and questions about the primary election? Early voting is actually underway now. If you haven't voted yet, or you've already voted, we want your calls. Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And let's start at the top. On the ballot, Republican and Democratic voters will be deciding a couple of Senate primaries here in Florida. Let's begin with Marco Rubio's bid for re-election, which had controversy, of course, because he initially said during his run for president that he would never go back to the Senate. And that didn't last very long.
No, it lasted about 3 months, from the March 15th primary for president to qualifying deadline, which is June 24th. You know, in the interim, you had candidates, Ron DeSantis, Carlos Lopez Cantera, David Jolly, others, basically in wait-and-see mode. Once Rubio got into the Senate race, obviously DeSantis ran for re-election where he's at. Carlos Lopez Cantera is staying lieutenant governor, and so on. Carlos Baruff, of course, is staying in the race, the Manatee home builder, independently wealthy.
Very much on in the Donald Trump camp.
Yes. I mean, you've seen his ads. He spends $500,000 a week on TV, and the ads are all, I'm a conservative outsider, I support Donald Trump. Marco Rubio is shaky on that. And, you know, that's the play that Baruff is making, but Baruff isn't really getting traction, you know, with the official party at this point. The RPOF, Republican Party of Florida, has basically leaned toward Marco Rubio. So Baruff's got, you know, an uphill sled. It looks like one of those 70-30 primaries in the end.
Yeah, you think that's an easy one for Rubio.
Yeah, I mean, Baruff, he's run a spirited campaign. He just has no institutional support, and he doesn't have the political machine that Marco Rubio has. So, you know, it looks like a 70-30, 68-32, however it goes, but it's not going to be close.
And then on the Democratic side, it's Patrick Murphy, the favorite to beat liberal firebrand Alan Grayson. There are some other names on that slate. But Murphy, the favored Hillary Clinton-aligned centrist Democrat, likely to win and face off against Rubio in November for this Senate seat.
Right. And, you know, there are parallels between Rubio and Murphy. Murphy is a younger guy. He used to be a Republican. You know, he flipped to Democrat, ran, beat Alan West, the formerly controversial representative who's now a conservative talk show staple. And you know, Murphy is an interesting guy because he's got Barack Obama behind him. You know, he's got Hillary Clinton. He's got the whole machine behind him. Alan Grayson has had some issues. Alan Grayson's divorce and the domestic violence allegations never actually went away. You know, he's having a hard time getting traction, and it was pretty close in the polls this summer. Now, as we round the bend, it looks like Murphy is going to win this one pretty comfortably. Pam Keith is also there. She'll take some of the vote also. African-American lady running for Senate, but, you know, she couldn't get traction when it was, you know, a multi-person field, and, you know, she'll probably be in the single digits in the end.
And if you're just tuning in, we're taking a look at all the races on the ballot in the August 30th primary election. Who will get your vote for Congress, for state attorney, for public defender here in North Florida? Call us up at 1-800-549-2937. All right, let's talk about these races, Congressional District 4 and 5, and then we'll talk about the state attorney and public defender contests, which are very hot right now. CD4, it's looking as though former Jack Sheriff John Rutherford is the man to beat, with Hans Tansler III trying to nip at his heels. And Lake Ray, although getting a lot of endorsements at the moment, seemingly will finish third.
It's looking like a race for second between Tansler and Ray. If you could put Tansler's money and Lake Ray's endorsements into one candidate, you would have a challenge for Rutherford. Ray, he's a reliable conservative, social conservative, spent 8 years in Tallahassee. He was also on council. He knows the legislative process, but the fundraising came slow for him. He had issues with the local Republican Party. They did a straw poll earlier this month. They left his name off the ballot. That's an inconvenient thing to do to the guy who's most recently the party chair.
Mm-hmm.
You have to wonder if internal politics and the former Rutherford supporters were in play there, if it was just an oversight, maybe a hangover from the Trump rally. Hans Tansler, he's been an interesting guy. He spent almost $1 million between PAC money and his campaign account. He's put $400,000 of his own money into the race, and he's still polling, just about 10%. He hasn't been able to catch fire. He's gone negative against Rutherford. A lot of liberal John Rutherford stuff, saying he's soft on things like stand your ground, soft on illegal immigration by saying that we're not going to arrest illegals unless they do something illegal besides being in the country. Things like that. And, Tansler hit him hard from the right, sort of a Ted Yoho sort of persona.
And is it working?
It may be eroding, maybe increasing Rutherford's negatives a little bit, but in terms of the public polling, it's not showing up. In terms of the internal polling that I'm hearing about, it's not showing up. The Tansler team says they have a poll that shows them getting traction, but they're not showing that poll to anybody. So it's kind of like, if you got a poll, show and prove. If you don't, then you don't have it. And, time's running out for Hans Tansler. There's just no there with that campaign.
And is time running out for Corrine Brown? She's up against a 22-count federal indictment as she seeks re-election. She's got a strong challenger in the form of former state rep Al Lawson of Tallahassee. Also another person in this race, LJ Holloway, who hails from Jacksonville and won positive reviews for her performance in a recent televised debate. But it looks as though we're going to see a very interesting contest between Lawson and Brown. Could Corrine Brown be voted out after more than two decades in CD5?
It's very possible. I mean, all three of these candidates have some red flags. I mean, Corrine Brown's got her 22 federal accounts that everybody's heard about. She's got about $30,000 in the bank right now for her campaign. She said to the media last week that, she's having a hard time financing running for office and, her legal defense. Al Lawson's got his own issues. He's got about $120,000, $125,000 in the bank, but a certain amount of it's coming from Republican-friendly PACs, political action committees. And Corrine Brown's team is making hay of that. They're saying that Al Lawson is a dino. He's basically a tool of the establishment, put in Rick Scott, Marco Rubio, and so on. LJ Holloway, she did make a strong showing in that debate, but with a strong showing comes scrutiny. She's got a foreclosure that dropped earlier this year. She's got back property taxes, and she's running a shoestring campaign, which, when I reached out to her and asked her about her financial issues, she said, this is not the time to talk. You're a week away from the ballot. This is exactly the time to talk. So you've got three candidates all with their own issues. The real issue for Lawson is suppressing the Jacksonville vote, creating doubt in Corrine Brown to sort of limit turnout, sort of peel away 15 to 20% locally. Holloway will get some percentage of local vote. And if Lawson can stack out west, and I don't see why he can't, because Corrine Brown can't afford media, then it's basically his game. And this is something that Susie Wiles, other Republicans, are pretty
comfortable
with.
They're backing him, not the Republican in this race, Glo Smith, who will face the Democratic winner in the fall. What's the backstory to that?
Well, Glo Smith is... she's run for office before. She's a nice lady. She told me that God told her to run for office, for what it's worth. But God is not donating money to her campaign. She has somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000 cash on hand. That's not enough to run competitively. And, Al Lawson is somebody who... you know, he's Blue Dog Democrat. He knows how to talk to these people in these rural communities, and you know, he's the police are comfortable with him.
And let's discuss the three other big issues on the local ballot. Then we'll go to everyone's calls: the state attorney contest, Angela Corey in the fight of her life to fend off Melissa Nelson, the most prominent challenger, Matt Shirk fighting off former Duval County Judge Charles Cofer in the public defender race, and the pension tax referendum, whether that will succeed or fail. Three very hotly contested races and or issues right now, as people are already voting on them, AG.
Right. I mean, we're seeing real turnout already. Republican turnout's around 11%. Democratic turnout's approaching 8%. So, you know, it's significant. We'll look at the state attorney race first because, I mean, that's been the biggest money race in the whole area, you know, with the arguable exception of the congressional race on the Rutherford-Tansler side. You know, there have been about $1 million come in for Nelson. Angela Corey's had serious money, too. And, you know, it's really something where it's become a referendum on Angela Corey. Corey's got the statistics, a good conviction rate. You know, the law enforcement community, especially the official people, are very comfortable with her. They have a good symbiotic relationship. But Melissa Nelson's talking about criminal justice reform. You know, she's talking about more transparency. And, you know, she's a fresh face. You know, Angela Corey's been there for 8 years. And the implicit question is, what would another 4 years of Angela Corey look like? Her negatives have been sky high with Republicans. Despite the police union support, it's hard to get rid of those negatives when she got them that high. There's also Wes White. You know, he's in the race also. He's going to get around 10% with a populist message that, you know, has appeal in Clay and Nassau County especially. Really it's going to come down to, is there enough anti-Angela Corey vote to disperse among White and Nelson? There's a way that Corey could still win this race, although the Nelson people tell you their internal polling still has them up double digits. So we'll see.
And on the pension plan, County Referendum 1, we're going to take your calls on that, too. We want to get to some of you right now at 549-2937. Herman is on the south side. Hi, Herman. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, AG.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. How are you all?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Enjoyed the report, but seemed to be some things I'm missing, AG. Didn't hear anything about Reggie Luster, who is also running, I believe, in the Senate, who's the attorney that's been practicing, I guess, according to him, 28 years. So he seems to say he's the great choice with 28 years as a lawyer. And I was kind of interested in hearing about House Rep 13 and 14 over there with Tracy Davis and I believe Kimberly Daniels, I guess that's your favorite person. And with CD5.
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Okay, and with CD5, could Congresswoman Brown and Ms. Holloway split votes and Al Lawson become the guy? Or will there be a runoff between Ms. Brown and Al Lawson?
Yeah, thank you, Herman. And by the way, Herman, Reginald Luster did appear on this program. He is in the Senate race, first African-American president of the Jacksonville Bar, among other accomplishments. So thank you for reminding us that he is in the race, his first run at office. And but yeah, he is a ballot and the only Jacksonville name on the ballot for a contest of that stature. What about CD5 in particular? Runoff?
They don't do runoffs in Florida, so
yeah.
It's going to be...
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for reminding me of that.
It's going to be plurality.
Okay, Tom in Mandarin. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I wanted to know what you guys thought of. I'm a Democrat who switched parties just for the primary so I could vote in the state attorney and public defender's office race. And I was wondering how you thought that might affect...
Yeah.
The Rutherford, the CD4 race, because I'm now inclined to vote for Rutherford, where I wasn't likely to vote at all in that race.
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. What about the dynamics of that? Several thousand people, according to the public records, have switched parties, in particular so they can vote in the state attorney and public defender contest. Could it affect another race?
Yes, it's definitely going to affect the Rutherford race. It's ironic because the messaging in Congressional District 4 has been, how far to the right can you get? You know, every candidate in that race has run to the right, and Tansler's people have been attacking liberal John Rutherford for the things we talked about before, and I think that's going to drive some of these motivated Nelson voters who registered as Republicans for this primary to vote for Rutherford. You know, that's just a guess because there's not the polling that dives down into that. Regarding the state attorney race, yeah, you've seen 6,000 people register Republican in the last couple months. And, you know, they've been driven solely by the state attorney race. You have to assume that the preponderance of them are going to turn out for Nelson. There's also Clay and
Nassau,
yes.
Mike tweets the show, 2,500 Dems and MPAs have registered as R's in Nassau County to vote in the school superintendent's race. Janet Atkins is done. We'll have to see. But that dynamic is at play in Nassau as well.
Yes, Janet Atkins is a polarizing figure, and in Nassau County especially. She's running against Kathy Burns for superintendent. Kathy Burns has been on the school board for 18 years, got the support of the teachers union. So, of course, Janet Atkins is, you know, leading with things like Common Core and, you know, talking about how Burns supported the Obama agenda on things like transgender bathrooms and so on. So it's a pretty nasty race. You know, Atkins has a lot of money. Burns does too. But this is really going to be one of these races where it's people talking to each other, you know, in the barbershop, people talking to each other at restaurants. So it's not just a media race. It's, you know, it's more like a small town race. So
sure. And let's talk quickly about the pension referendum. Lenny Curry, Mayor Curry, is going to come out with a TV ad blitz to get people to vote yes for Jacksonville, as it's called, to extend the half-cent sales tax to pay down the pension liability in the city. A really strong push at the end. One thing that might push against that is that people are voting early. But what does the polling show? What's the lay of the land, do you think, on the pension vote?
Well, the poll, you know, what you hear from the people on the inside is that polling is healthy, that they're doing well with African Americans, doing well with Democrats. But, you know, in the end, because it's going to be such a heavily Republican electorate, that may not be as much of an issue as, you know, was thought out when the campaign launched. I went to the Hobnob, WOKV's straw poll event. The pension carried pretty well, got about 60-65% of the vote, you know, among these Republicans who are highly motivated. You know, there's all kinds of arguments against the referendum. People are saying that it's deferring payment and, you know, basically passing it on to the kids and so on. But, you know, it is a solution to the pension problem. It does have bipartisan support. And it's something where, in the end, you know, if Curry can get 50 plus one, he's going to be happy with it. I'm thinking it's going to be closer to 55.
That's your prediction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I look at it, when I look at the dynamics of the race, when I look at where the polling is, and look at the fact that, you know, Curry is saying that when he gets to talk to people about this, he manages to convince them. So it may just be a matter of voter education. They've got about $2 million into the effort. They spent most of it. They got about $360 left in the bank. So it's more voter education. But you've got Democrats, you've got Republicans, you've got the unions, a lot of people in favor of it. So, and the opposition is not organized. That's something to consider, too, because even though you have people like former council people, you have Tom and Janix of KIPP, and so on, they're not giving the same message. They're not singing from the same hymnal. So there's not an organized coalition against it.
And it seems as though people that are opposed to it are opposed for different reasons.
Exactly.
You've got some folks who are probably going to vote against this because they're upset with the mayor for other things, standing with Donald Trump at a rally, and issues that really don't have anything to do with the fiscal issue. But as you say, these are different blocks of voters who are motivated for different reasons.
Right. And, you know, that's the problem. The opposition is kind of like the Tower of Babel. They want to build something, but they all speak different languages. And, you know, the messaging, you know, behind Yes or Jacksonville is very unified.
Okay, let's go to Mark on the South Side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Honestly, this is a question to you, Melissa. Could you have picked a better person to come on the air and talk about just, you know, the facts of the other races? I mean, this guy, AG, the first thing he said, talking about CD4, is, oh, they're all good conservatives. They went to Tallahassee, did a great job. And then when it comes to CD5, they all have red flags. I mean, what's up with that? And then it sounds like you're holding your nose when you talk about the people who are switching from Democrats to Republicans to vote in a race they want to vote in.
Thanks for the call, Mark. AG, are you too partisan in your commentary?
No, I'm not. I've talked about CD4 and talked about the heavily hard right Republican messaging in that entire race. That's basically how that race is gone. The fact that the CD5 candidates all have personal scandals, that's not my doing.
Personal scandal does Al Lawson have?
Al Lawson's taking Republican money.
How is that a scandal?
It's not.
Come on.
It's not a scandal to me. It's a scandal to the Corrine Brown campaign who keeps messaging it.
A
scandal is only a scandal if you lose a race based on it. Otherwise, it's a blip on the radar. And, Corrine Brown is messaging heavily that Al Lawson's a Republican puppet. Voters who are partisan Democrats, that may be a big deal.
Conrad on the north side. Hi, Conrad.
Yeah, good morning. Business owner in Arlington and of the north side and other parts of town. Old Duval County resident and following closely this Vote No campaign that I am part of as part of the Concerned Taxpayers. I heard Bill McClure yesterday lamenting the loss of signage and how much it gets into these people's pockets that are trying to participate in the democratic process. I should have called in yesterday. I've been monitoring about 5 early voting sites for our Vote No signs, which we have just a very limited number of signs that we were able to spend part of our treasury on so we could participate. And there are signs disappearing selectively from certain of the voting early voting sites. Highlands yesterday and Saturday, a city truck swept through the entire parking lot and the right of surrounding the property and swept every sign, except, interestingly, everywhere this happens, yes signs remain, the Vote Yes signs. And at Highlands yesterday, I have a picture of a Judge Wilkerson candidate sign that they picked up everything around it and left the Wilkerson sign there, which defies logic. But when you approach these people, this happened at University Park all last week, when you approach these people, which I did yesterday, and you mentioned that it looks as if the mayor may be giving marching orders to his minions to get out and clear the opposition, they go silent. They won't comment.
Okay.
But I just wanted to input and reinforce what McClure was talking about yesterday.
All right.
And I'll be down at City Council tonight because this is getting into their pockets when they try to campaign.
Okay. Thanks, Conrad. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you have video evidence of that, that's something you want to, push to the media, push to WJCT. They have an active news desk here.
Yeah.
Push to TV, push to whomever.
And let's be clear, the long and time-honored practice of swiping campaign signs is nothing new in this city or really any city. But, we're getting anecdotal reports of some pretty nasty operatives out there doing that kind of stuff.
That's the game. The game is the politics of personal destruction is how it's played. You don't get, they all make clean campaign promises at the beginning, but at the end they all get in the gutter, and stealing signs is just part of that. And if you're seeing it, videotape it.
I would. Yeah, absolutely.
Share it. Make it viral.
Pick up Folio Weekly tomorrow for the cover story on all the races. A.G. Gankarski, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, later, the wine, chocolate, and fashion of wine, women, and shoes. But up next, how you can get some free help to quit smoking from Tobacco Free Florida. Back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, Washington Post veterans Michael Cranish and Mark Fisher talk about Donald Trump, his early life, his business deals, his use of publicity and celebrity, his personal life, and the lesson he learned from New York power lawyer Roy Cohn.
When they hit you, hit back 10 times harder.
Their new book, based on the work of a team of Post reporters, is Trump Revealed. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Year-old violinist Simone Porter is a PT young artist in residence. She'll introduce us to this piece by Ernest Bloch.
I feel like this piece travels really through the five stages of grief. It goes very dark, but I think in the end it arrives at transcendence.
Simone Porter on the next performance today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, quitting tobacco is never easy, but finding help should be. With its new Quit Your Way program, the Florida Department of Health's Tobacco Free Florida initiative is making it easier for tobacco users in the state to access the free resources that are available to all of us. With more, we welcome Vicki Evans, the Tobacco Program Manager for Tobacco Free Florida. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Tonya Harris, the Interim ED of the Northeast Florida Area Health Education Center. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, so we've known about Tobacco Free Florida for some time, Vicki. Now, a new effort, Quit Your Way. How does Quit Your Way work, and how can people access it?
Well, Quit Your Way is something that we're very excited about. We have had the three and free easy ways to quit over the last few years, and this year we're launching Quit Your Way because we want to make sure that people have exactly what they need as far as the tools, the exact tools that's going to fit their quit plan, and combine the services that are going to work best for them.
And in this kit, you get nicotine patches, text to quit, email tips, and a quit guide. Lots of support. How does the Tonya? How does this text to quit program work as part of this?
So the text to quit is a way where the person can get text messages, little tips, just things daily to keep them on their quit path. And so people that they may not have access to emails to get onto the web to quit, they have their cell phones, and so they get little text messages throughout the day to kind of keep them encouraged and little tips to help with their quit path.
And that support makes all the difference in the world.
Yes.
For people, because quitting smoking or tobacco generally, it's so addictive that if you try to do it without help, it can be incredibly hard.
Yes.
I remember when my dad quit in the 70s and he went through a program called Smokeenders. Do you remember that?
Yes, I've heard of that.
And for years he saved, they would cut the pack of cigarettes in half and they would smoke half a cigarette instead of the whole cigarette. And for years he saved his final unsmoked half pack of cigarettes as like a souvenir of quitting smoking.
Wow.
You know, that's how they used to do it. This is the new way to do it. And Quit Your Way, by the way, is free. This 2-week starter kit. Now, this is interesting because if people have gone through Tobacco Free Florida, you report, Vicki, that they are 5 to 11 times more likely to quit than if they try on their own.
That's exactly right. There's a lot of evidence-based information out there, Melissa, that shows if people get counseling, if they use the nicotine replacement therapy, if they use some of the other tools that are available to them, it will double the chance that their quit attempt will be successful.
Antonia, this is such an important public health issue. Bring us up to date on the state of tobacco in Florida usage, how it's gone down over the years, and how this program is helping to, you know, improve public health in the Sunshine State, if you could.
So from 2011 to 2014, the prevalence rate of cigarette smoking among adults in Florida, it decreased by 8.8%. And that was 19.3% in 2011 to 2014. So it went down drastically. And the Surgeon General's report states that tobacco has killed more than 20 million people since the first Surgeon General's report came out in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge public health issue that we are attacking, and we have been very successful with Tobacco Free Florida.
How have you tracked the reduction in smoking and tobacco rates over time with the launch of the program, Vicki?
Well, it's interesting because it has been proven that the actual success rate of the programs is about 38%.
Mm-hmm.
So we have had about 137,000 Floridians quit by using the Tobacco-Free Florida since 2007.
That's great. Now, Tobacco-Free Florida is running new TV and radio ads all over the state about Quit Your Way. You can access Quit Your Way right now for free. That's the other thing I know you want to stress. Tobacco-Free Florida is free to everyone in the state.
Yes, Melissa, we can't say free enough. the classes are free. Everything is free. The nicotine replacement products are free. If they come to class, they can get 4 weeks of the patches, lozenge, or gum for free. They can also, as you said, if they can't come to a class, they can call the phone Quit, and they will mail them 2 free weeks of nicotine replacement products along with the Quit Guide that will give them a lot of helpful tips to set their quit plan.
And you can get the Quit Your Way kit right now at the website as well. Just go to tobaccofreeflorida.com. Quit smoking today with the help of this free statewide program. Vicki Evans and Tonya Harris here to share it. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, last week the Zika virus continued to spread through parts of Miami Beach. The National Institutes of Health warns Texas and Louisiana could be next. The growing Zika threat, tough choices for pregnant women, and the search for a vaccine. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, WJCT Television is working with the Jaguar Foundation to produce JAG's Teen Talk, a program focused on teens and success. You can catch it right here on WJCT TV on September 1st at 8 p.m. Here's a quick preview. Take a listen.
Hey, everybody. My name is Carson Tinker. I'm the long snapper for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Welcome to JAG's Teen Talk. Hey, the Jags are more than just a home team on game day. We're also a part of your community. We know that some of our younger fans look up to us as role models, and that's one of the reasons why Teen Talk is so important to us.
All right. Educator Amy Morales is featured on the show. She joins us along with the show's co-producer, Jennifer Candelino, and let's talk about Teen Talk. Hey, good morning to you both.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having us.
Good morning, Melissa.
And I'm sure the kids were so excited to get to appear on this television broadcast with the players, Amy. You're also interviewed in the show. What's your role in JAG's Teen Talk?
My role in JAG's Teen Talk is to help parents and teens understand the fundamental development of the brain during the adolescent years, which is very different from early childhood and even adulthood. So,
and there's so much that we're learning about this and how it can affect children's decision-making, impulse control, What's the most important information that will be shared?
The most important information that will be shared is the real positive aspects of being a teen. Frequently in the news, we are very negative about teens, impulsive, they make bad decisions. And this is really meant to help us understand the really exciting part of being a teen and really what is going on developmentally. So that's what's discussed during the show.
And let's talk about the role of the Jaguars, Jennifer, as role models to the kids. This whole thing was put together, this program, to bring the children and the athletes together along with teachers. What else will we learn in this show?
Well, this program's been produced by the Jaguars Foundation for the last 16 years. It really started as a teen pregnancy prevention program.
Right. And it was called Straight Talk.
Straight Talk,
right.
Exactly. And then it really just evolved over time. Obviously, so much has changed in the last 16 years with what adolescents face. And at one point, we went into cyber safety and cyber bullying. And this year, we wanted to take a different approach and look at why teens act the way that they do. The information that Amy has is just fascinating, and it really is helpful to understand. I mean, we want teens to abide by certain rules, but they don't all abide the same way. And there's a method to their madness, and there's a reason why. And we talk about the development. One of the most interesting facts that Amy had when she was talking with our teens in the show is that the brain isn't fully developed until the age of 25.
Right.
So there's so much going on. Yeah. They're like literally under construction right now.
What are the biggest issues that the kids are talking to you about that they feel they're dealing with, the biggest stressors for them today?
That they're very overscheduled and really a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of this has to do with shifts in the college admissions process for kids, standardized testing, and that we're really, and also the realities of living in a 24/7 digital world. Mm. And I really like to point out to students and parents, the only way that your brain ever learns how to do anything is by making a mistake. And we know teens are going to make mistakes, but we want to help them understand that these risks can be very dangerous if they are recorded on social media. So,
Do you encourage the kids to take screen time breaks?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a huge
issue. You need to tell my kids that. I try.
It's a huge issue. It's a double-edged sword.
It is, isn't it?
Because there are so many great things that have come with technology, but really turning it off. And I noticed this even with families. You'll be at a restaurant and you'll see everyone is on their cell phone. Mm-hmm. You know, turn it off, look at each other, talk to each other face-to-face. I think that's a real issue for our teens as well.
And, of course, we want teens to watch this show with their parents, Jennifer, right here on WJCT-TV. And it's all intended to reach children young adults and encourage this conversation.
Right, and parents too. I mean, Amy has a wonderful wrap to the show where she's addressing parents to, you know, just be patient and understand what they're going through. And for teens, that this isn't necessarily a license to make mistakes. You need to make informed decisions and healthy risks and things like that. But the tools that we offer in this program are at least a starting point, a basis for conversation. And the beauty of this community undertaking, really, because all of the local stations at some point in time over the next couple of weeks, starting September 1st, will air this program. So it's really a community initiative.
Oh, fabulous. I wasn't aware of that. So it'll air first here on WJCT
correct.
Then make the rounds.
It will make the rounds mostly during the Labor Day weekend, but really through September 18th or 19th, JCT will air it several times throughout. And then also on demand, Xfinity On Demand, if you search Jags Teen Talk, you can watch it at any point. Mm-hmm. And then there is a website, jaguars.com / Teen Talk. So the beauty of it is if that conversation has started and you missed a part of the show or you want to go back and kind of listen to what, and Amy has some wonderful resources that we'll have in the credits and on the website to follow up. And like I said, it's just so fascinating to really understand. I have two daughters and a son. And as a parent, you know, you raise them all the same. You expect them to act all the same. But I know my son is quite different than my daughters. And even each of them are unique in their own way, too. And it really helped me understand that they're wired a little differently. Again, it's not an excuse or a license to get away with acting a certain way. But it helps a parent understand a little bit more about what's going on and give you a little bit more leeway.
Absolutely. So parents, watch this with your kids. Jags Teen Talk. It's going to debut next Thursday night, September 1st at 8 p.m. right here on WJCT Television, and lots of repeated airings through the Labor Day holiday and through the month of September. Or, as we've learned, just go to jaguars.com/teentalk and look there as well. Such an important program, and it's a long tradition here on the First Coast to as we air these shows. So, ladies, thank you so much for joining us, educator Amy Morales and producer Jennifer Candelino. It's going to be a great show. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And when we come back, a look ahead to Wine, Women, and Shoes. Now, that's an event you don't want to miss either. Back in a moment.
It's been a rough summer for Donald Trump supporters. Their candidate is behind in the polls. He picked a fight with the Gold Star family, and he has struggled to unify the party. In Pennsylvania, some Trump supporters are grappling with all of that, including the CEO of a small paper mill.
That's not my style. That's not most people's style. That's why we turn our nose a little bit sometimes.
Later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Jackie Carter, Executive Secretary for Duval County's Emergency Operations Center. Have a plan for home, work, and school. Planning can save you valuable time and money in a disaster. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Join WJCT and Baptist Health for Girls' Day Out, Saturday, September 17th, Hyatt Hotel. The day will include great national and local speakers that will inspire and empower you to live your life to the fullest. Tickets are $40. Do not miss out. Log on to WJCT.org/Girls Day Out.
Welcome back. Well, if you love WJCT, show us on Instagram. We're going to publish our favorite Instagram photo of the week this Friday in our First Read newsletter. Just make sure to use the hashtag #ILoveWJCT and subscribe to the newsletter at WJCTnews.org and get your daily First Read e-blast of all the headlines of the week. Well, finally, this hour, with unlimited wine tastings, a fashion show, free-flowing mimosas, and Peterbrook chocolate, yes, Wine, Women, and Shoes is not your typical fundraising event. Lots of women and men are marking their calendars for this one. And we've got a preview right now as we welcome Georgette Dumont, assistant professor of political science at UNF and a model in the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And also with us, Jason Spencer, board member with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northeast Florida. Good to see you, Jason.
Good morning, Melissa.
And this event will benefit Big Brothers Big Sisters, which is so great. But first, let's talk about the fun part, the wine, the women, and the shoes. Jed Dumont, the most glamorous political science professor I know.
Thank you.
You're going to be modeling in this. How did that all come about?
I have lunch probably every other month or so with Warren Grimes. We're also community coaches through the Nonprofit Center of Northeast Florida, and that's how we met. And so we get together, and I guess he just kind of thought about me when he was looking at needing models for Wine, Women, and Shoes.
Now, here's what people get with their ticket. And I bought a ticket to this, by the way, so I can't wait. You get unlimited wine tastings from 8 wine vintners, a fashion show, a marketplace featuring Aria boutiques, lunch, flowing mimosas, and a Peterbrook chocolate fountain, swag bags. Who doesn't love that?
And don't forget the eye candy. The eye candy is what we call the shoe guys.
Oh. Tell me about the shoes. I must know everything about the shoes.
The shoes or the shoe guys?
All of it. Okay, I want to know all of it.
When women go there, it's $150 a ticket or $1,500, $1,500 for a table of 10 of you and your girlfriends. You get to enjoy lunch,
Mimosa bar, different types of wine samplings throughout, as well as a marketplace where you can buy accessories and clothing, and there are shoes. It's a fabulous time, and all of that while you are being waited on by these wonderful
shoe guys.
Absolutely.
So, Jason, these shoe guys are just going to be pouring wine and walking around all around the event, and basically just making this a party. Is that about right?
Absolutely. This is a party with a cause. And the shoe guys will be pouring wines. They will be walking around with silver platters, hosting a lot of the local fashion designers. And then I'll also be just serving as general host for the event.
Are you one of the shoe guys?
I am one of the shoe guys this year. So thank you, Georgette, for calling me eye candy. I appreciate that.
Very handsome. Very handsome. And you are also on the board of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northeast Florida. This is all to benefit that organization.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So Big Brothers Big Northeast Florida, this is our largest fundraising event. Last year, we raised over $95,000. And those dollars were to support our youth mentoring programs here in Northeast Florida.
Mm-hmm.
This is the third year that we've hosted Wine Women in Shoes. And we're fortunate to be the local partner for Wine Women in Shoes, which is a national brand. And throughout the country, they partner with local charities putting on these events. And we're excited for this year.
Okay. Now, I'm just seeing here that not only are you the shoe guy going to be doing duties, you're going to be participating in an opening dance that is an ode to Patrick Swayze in Dirty Dancing.
Oh, we can't give away too much now.
No,
we
you can give it all away right
no,
now.
No,
yes,
no,
you
no.
can, and you will.
No,
I want to know everything.
We will not. So you got to show up to come and
see what
we're
doing. That's no good.
It definitely would be over the top.
So, okay. So, basically, every woman in town needs to buy a ticket to this event. It sounds
definitely.
Like it's going to be so much fun.
It will most likely be sold out, so I'd say get your tickets soon. It really is a fabulous time. I was an attendee for the first 2 years, and this year, as you stated, I get to be a model. And I'm not going to be the only one up there, thankfully. Also, Rachel Vitti, a youth human rights advocate, and her husband is Superintendent Nikolai Vitti. She'll also be a model, as well as Megha Perkay and Nancy Chartrand. So there's going to be some fabulous people there. It really is a great time. And think about it this way. Start the morning off, get a mani and a pedi, go to the event, wear your strappy shoes. Everybody gets to see
people
you at your...
show off their most fun shoes.
Oh, yes.
Right?
There is a shoe cam as well. So when you walk in, and there's a competition as to who has the best pair of shoes among
I
attendees.
Love it. I love it.
There's also a... and there's you can win events for that. There is the closet. Which is a fabulous, it's worth about, it
$3,000
yes. worth of items in that closet that you can, that gets raffled off. You buy it, purchase a, 1 year it was a key, another year, so there are different things.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, the people that came up with Wine Women and Shoes, and this has been done all over the country, they clearly understand where we live.
Yes.
They know what we like.
Yes,
yeah,
they
absolutely.
Do.
So this is definitely a huge event in terms of just sheer fun. Now, Jed, are you practicing your catwalk, and are you ready to rock the runway?
Well, as you noted, I'm an academic, and I'm just going to try not to fall off the runway.
Are you modeling the shoes or the gown or both?
Well, there are different clothes, and the clothes are going to be from the Pink Nickel Boutique as well as Rosenblum's. And so they'll have different clothing there that the models will be modeling off, as well as shoes.
Oh, very
nice.
Lots
of shoes.
And you'll be, I know that nobody cares as much about what you'll be wearing, Jason, but I know you'll look great.
Hopefully I will look great.
Yes. So again, it's Wine, Women, and Shoes. Tickets are still available, but they are going fast. Go to winewomenandshoes.com/Jacksonville. And this is on September 23rd, correct?
Or September 24th.
September 24th. And by the way, one more kicker to this, it's going to be held at the beautiful new downtown Jesse Ball DuPont Center.
Yes, it is gorgeous natural light in there. And if you haven't had a chance to see this building yet, it's absolutely astonishing.
It is.
So get your tickets now for Wine, Women, and Shoes. Come see Georgette Dumont model in the show. She's also a professor at UNF. Jason Spencer, board member with Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Northeast Florida. Have fun, and thanks for being with us.
And we'll see you there.
Yes, thank you.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum is running the board. And the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And
Watch video on demand segments at tvjax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, last week the Zika virus continued to spread through parts of Miami Beach. The National Institutes of Health warns Texas and Louisiana could be next. The growing Zika threat, tough choices for pregnant women, and the search for a vaccine. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.